Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning, good morning. Good Saturday morning to you. This is MC Blair. Welcome to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And now they're streaming live. I think we have some live listeners out there, 947WPVC.org. I hope so. Hey, all right. You know, I'm going to start off, I usually start off with some headlines, and I will start off right now. This is called Egg Magic. And it's a pretty incredible little package, the egg. It's versatile, protein-packed, and especially from a pastured hens. Very, very important that they are not in cages and are able to go out into the pasture and eat all those wonderful greens. It makes for a nice dark yellow to orange yolk, which is full of beta-carotene. It's high in riboflavin, phosphorus, and vitamins D, A, B12, as well as complete amino acid source. Now, this is where it gets really cool. What about the shell? Most people just throw those shells away, right? Or grind them up, put them in their garden, which is a good thing. Feed them to the chickens if you've got chickens. That's also a good thing. But it's composed entirely of calcium carbonate. Now, you know, we go to the doctor, and especially older folks, they get osteoporosis or osteopenia, and they'll have to take a calcium supplement, or they are recommended to take a calcium supplement. Well, this is it right here. And if you're trying to get enough calcium without dairy or currently take an over-the-counter calcium supplement, which I certainly don't recommend, eating your eggshells may be for you. Now, how do you make an eggshell edible? You know, you don't want to just pop the shell in your mouth and chew it up. It's kind of tough, a little greedy, I would say. But you can just follow these simple steps to transform your eggshells into a high-quality food-derived supplement, which, of course, are the best ones. You save your eggshells. You can do this right in the egg carton if you like. Surprisingly, they don't smell. You can leave the membrane. Oh, you must leave the membrane, absolutely, in the shells, but be sure and rinse out any egg white. Once you have a quantity of eggshells, you sterilize them for a few minutes in boiling water. You strain them. You spread them on a baking pan or two and leave them to dry overnight. You bake the eggshells at a low temperature. I would suggest somewhere around 170, maybe 180, for about 10 minutes just to dry them out. For efficiency's sake, you can put them in the oven when you're going to cook or bake anyway. I just take them out before the temperature gets too high, right? Yeah. Then you grind the eggshells to a really fine powder. You know, one of those small coffee grinders or something like that. That usually works best. And then you store it in a tightly closed mason jar in a cool, dry cupboard. You add, when you're ready to use it, about a half teaspoon of eggshell powder per day to your favorite foods for 400 to 500 milligrams of additional bioavailable calcium. That's very important, the bioavailable part. You may notice a slightly greedy quality when added to some foods, but it's tolerable in smoothies or yogurt and undetectable in baked goods or heavier foods. Whenever supplementing calcium, be sure to get adequate magnesium and vitamin D in your diet for better absorption. And it's also the perfect garden companion. Not up for eating your eggshells? Well, calcium is equally important in your garden. As I said before, a calcium-deficient soil causes slow growth and diseases like blossom end rot. That's when tomatoes, squash, or peppers turn black on the end. You can use the leftover eggshells as a soil amendment. The key to using eggshells in the garden, give it time. Plants take calcium through the roots, so you can work the crushed or powdered shells deep into the soil in the fall, or at the very least in early spring to allow them to dissolve. Pest deterrent. Crush your leftover eggshells into small shards and sprinkle over the soil in your planters or garden beds. Slugs and other pests will find sharp shells inhospitable and find greener pastures. So there you go. More use for the egg. Unbelievable. So we have another headline here. Community Health helps local farms and families. Now, this is in Ohio, but they partnered with the farmers market and continued the vision of creating healthy, thriving communities through this relationship. They made it possible for more families in the community to access healthy, locally grown food. Now, access, food access, it's all about food security. It's all about food justice. Very, very important that everybody in your community has access to real food. Now, here's how they do it, which is exactly how we do it. Those people that are qualified for the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, they're encouraged. They can bring their card to the farmer's market, and this is also true right here, and get double. So if you have $10 worth of SNAP, you get $20 worth of tokens to purchase real food at the farmer's market. So, yeah, for even for folks that are in need of assistance, they can get real food. I'm MC Blair. You're listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the voice of resistance in Charlottesville. After completing the community health needs assessment, they discovered there was a high demand for nutrition information and resources. The goal of the program was to assist with eliminating the cost barriers of healthy eating and hopefully drive people to a new place where they can get these healthy food options while also promoting and supporting healthy eating and local businesses. You know, that's so important, folks. Community-based agriculture. Keep the money in the community. Help the local farmers. It's just unbelievable. This year, they created healthy recipe cookbooks that include meals with ingredients available at the farmer's market. What a great idea. And we have folks that do that as well. As a matter of fact, we're going to be hearing a little later from City Schoolyard Gardens, and they teach the kids about growing food and what it takes to grow food. They get them interested in preparing it. Actually, the PB&J Fund has a program called Chef Kids. We'll listen to that. We'll hear that from Courtney Evans. And they actually teach the kids to prepare these foods. And it turns out that when a child helps grow, harvest, and then prepare the foods, foods that they don't normally eat, like broccoli or, you know, asparagus or whatever, all of a sudden, they want to eat it because, hey, I grew it and I prepared it. It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. In addition, they're offering a $15 Fresh Food RX. That's, like for prescriptions for people with chronic illnesses in need of financial supports. All they have to do, they're given the Fresh Food RX coupon from their physician or nurse practitioner, which can be exchanged for tokens to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables at the market. This is our way of supporting those patients with chronic diseases and illnesses who may not qualify for SNAP. What a great idea. So any nurse practitioners or docs that are listening, maybe we could start something like that in our area. And if there already is a program like that, please do not hesitate to email me at mcblair, no marks or anything, just mcblair at 947WPVC.org. MC Blair at 947WPVC.org. I welcome any and all. Now, this next one is really cool. In Montreal, the IGA says it's first supermarket in Canada to sell produce grown on their roof. They have a rooftop garden right there at the grocery store. And the produce they serve inside the store is grown on the roof. I saw a picture of it, folks, and man, that was pretty good size. You know, so maybe we should get with Whole Foods. Somebody knows somebody at Amazon since they just bought them. Tell them, hey, how about some rooftop gardens on your Whole Foods? It would cut down on waste for produce. You know, in the produce business in grocery stores, about 50% goes to waste, never gets sold. That's one of the reasons why produce is, you know, pretty high as far as price goes. So if they cut down on waste by growing it themselves right on the roof, then they could cut down on the price as well. You wouldn't have to pay the middleman. See, that's how it works, folks. So anyway, we are going to go to a replay of Amy Leeser. She's a nurse practitioner right here in town at Forest Lakes Medical Center under the UVA. And we are going to play some of her right now. Here with lovely Amy Leeser. She's our guest today. She's a nurse practitioner with UVA System. Hi, Amy.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
Yeah, Hippocrates that said, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food.
There it is.
So a great quote that I love. Yeah.
That is a great quote. That was Hippocrates, right?
Yes.
And doctors take a Hippocratic oath, right? From Hippocrates. So why have they added that one in there? That says do no harm, right?
I think they need
to put that in there, you know, and make that at the forefront, because I think that would, I know that that would change a lot of people's thinking. They would turn more towards diet. There would be more emphasis on nutrition in the training. We would have a healthier country. Less sickness and lower doctor bills, lower copays. Insurance rates would drop.
Have an epidemic of chronic diseases that are related to diet and lifestyle. And so I think looking to that as a solution makes sense.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to look at the history of food. And so for centuries, we relied on food as a source of energy and health and connection. But then over the last 50 to 60 years, there were some changes in the food supply. And like we talked about, how we use food has contributed to some extent to this growing epidemic of chronic disease. So processed foods alter the food supply and interfere with the best use of those food nutrients. So, for example, hydrogenated oils, adding sugars, and then like these toxic agricultural chemicals we talked about, they do make the shelf life longer and they make things prettier and they appeal to our sweet tooth. But, you know, as a steady diet, they can lead us towards disease. So just recognizing this historical food, that food represented a connection within the community and families and friends, and this loss of connection has also decreased preparation of food from scratch and then increased our intake of processed food. So we're not making food together as much as we did decades ago. So these schoolyard programs are really encouraging not only the local organic food agriculture, but also bringing back this sense of connection and learning through food. So some interesting statistics. So last I looked, maybe 20 to 25% of time at school is spent in the schoolyard, hopefully more. But fifth grade students that participated in schoolyard gardening activities scored higher in science achievement tests. They also showed significant increase in self-understanding, the ability to work in groups. Also, these multicultural gardening programs for recent immigrants helped them share their cultural heritages, feel a sense of belonging, and then also 100% of schools using environmental-based learning had students with improved behavior, not only attitudes, but also test scores.
Oh, man.
So 77% of schools with environmental-based curriculums had improved standardized test scores.
So learning through agriculture.
Yeah. Then 73% had improved grade point averages. So, and across the board. So improved science, geography, social studies, math, English. So really a wide range of increase in, not only achievement in school, but also self-understanding and ability to relate to one another. So that connection through food and bringing that back through the schoolyard garden is really amazing.
Yeah.
There was a study in Michigan State University. They looked at obesity and schoolyard gardening, and they showed that when they had healthy snacks based on the schoolyard gardening practices, the overall daily consumption of fruit increased by 26% and vegetables increased by 14%. And really, the kids just began to choose healthier options because of the education. They understood.
Yeah, well, they obviously were feeling better and feeling more communal with even people from, like you said, different cultures. And so that just makes them better citizens, and oh my goodness, you know. And then, of course, I'm sure that they'll hear, you know how your kids learn from you. I mean, that's just how it is, you know.
Yes.
And we learn from our parents, and our kids will learn from us. And you'll see kids out there today, say, you know, exhibiting these hateful things that you'll see in politics, which we're not going to get into. But they learn that from their parents. So now, if the kids are learning these things at school and working with people from the other cultures, then, my goodness, maybe they'll teach the parents. You know what I mean? You know, say, hey, that's not the way it is. You know, I'm with so-and-so, and that's, you know, these kids, you know what I mean? They're, you know, can't we just get along kind of thing? So it's just, that's why the education, you know, that's why educating the students of the present to change the adults of the future is obviously the way to go, and why these schoolyard programs are so important.
Yeah.
I call it sustainable schools, right? Amy, tell us a little bit about yourself, why you went to nurse practice. You were a nurse first, and then you went into the MP field, right?
Yeah, I started my career at Duke, and then I went to the University of Washington in Seattle, and then the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And so after working at several academic centers and getting some good experience, and I did some intensive care, I found my home and family practice. And I just really love walking with the patient throughout different phases of life, and creating that relationship. So right now, I'm at Forest Lakes Health Center, which is a University of Physicians group, part of the University of Virginia. And I am just really passionate about getting down to the root of people's health concerns and trying to restore health in the body. So I'm very fortunate that UVA has supported my continuing education. And most recently, I've completed some coursework with the Institute of Functional Medicine. And so I would encourage listeners to go to the Institute of Functional Medicine and look into that approach. And they're doing some great research in the Cleveland Clinic about health outcomes and cost reduction. So if you want to try that approach, you can certainly schedule with me. And it's a unique lens to look at healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so really, I like to look at the body kind of like this ecosystem of interconnected network of systems.
Yeah.
So like for an ecologist who would successfully restore a disease ecosystem, they have to look at the interdependence between the fish and the insects and the water. And so just like an ecologist restores health in that way, I also try to look at all the different systems of the body. Mm-hmm. And I find that kind of restoring that balance of health throughout different systems not only helps to prove disease, but also people find a higher level of energy and vitality. So it's a neat approach that I find patients are really resonating with. So.
Wow, that's really neat. So functional medicine, they can look that up online, or
Institute of Functional Medicine.
Okay.
They can just look that up online, and certainly nutrition is a big part of my practice, and food as medicine. Excited to be on the show today, because it's really powerful. So last time I looked, Medicare was, I think, projected to be broke by 2026, and a huge part of this healthcare spending is on metabolic diseases. So I looked at something in 2012, $245 billion spent on diabetes. So diabetes and obesity.
Yeah, that's childhood obesity and diabetes, type 2 diabetes, totally controlled by diet. We're going to take a little break, and we will be back. Hey, we're back. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You're listening to Your Health right here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Now, of course, streaming live at 947WPVC.org. Man, I hope we do have some listeners out there. Pretty cool. Yes, sir. Still hot. In case you hadn't noticed, it is still hot to go. Yes, indeed. Now, I was talking about the IGA market up in Canada growing food on the rooftops. And it says the rooftop produce is expensive to grow, but it's sold at the same price as other organic items. It said it will be cultivated with the greatest care to the environment. The garden will use water taken from the store's dehumidification system. Produce will be certified by EcoCert of Canada. And Jeanette Abbey Nader of City Schoolyard Gardens was a former organic certifier as well. And she's really, really super qualified. And I am going to play an excerpt from their time here on To Your Health. Here it is.
Great partners as well. I think another really good one, and I was actually talking to one of the school board members last night, and she was mentioning a family coming through and getting to see Buford Garden as they're moving to the area, and how excited they were about the opportunity for their family to take part in what's going on there at Buford, which is the middle school here in the city. About 95% of parents and teachers feel that having a CSG garden at their school is very important. And so she got to see that firsthand with this family, that they were, you know, looking around the school, trying to make some decisions, saw that garden, and fell in love.
Oh my.
Which is what we want to happen for families.
Absolutely.
And students, you know, for their families as well.
Yeah, and I imagine the kids and you know, any of the participants in with the city schoolyard garden is they feel maybe a sense of pride and obviously health. We
yeah.
hope, you know. Do you find the students do better in school?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of reasons why. I mean, you can look at different, if you're talking about actual academic performance or feeling as though they have a place to be that belongs to them. There's many different reasons why students who are engaged in being in the garden, being healthy. I mean, that, of course, having a healthy snack before you have to take a test or, you know, do work in class,
yeah.
that can have a significant effect.
This is Eileen Carey from City Schoolyard Gardens, and the next one that we play from them will be from Jeanette Abbey Nader.
On how you perform. So there's a ton. We have been doing evaluations over the years, so we have research to back that up as well as to how the experience having the garden there, participating in the programs, really does provide great outcomes for the students.
Oh, man. You're listening to Your Health here on WPVC 94.7 Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're talking with Jeanette Abbey Nader and Eileen Carey of City Schoolyard Garden. You mentioned before about how Charlottesville High School actually has an accredited course now. Is that...
Well, they're starting one.
They're
in the
starting
fall.
One in
yeah,
the fall.
Yeah, so the garden at Charlottesville High School has been there for a few years now. Mm-hmm. Peter Davis, who's a teacher at the high school, started the garden just on his own. He's been doing it for a couple years, and he has a garden to market class. So it's a class where students grow things in the garden and then learn about how to market them. They have a small CSA, they grow transplants, and then they sell those.
Oh, my.
So that's been really amazing. And then we just joined forces. So he's been doing that for a few years. We just joined forces with him this year, and the principal, Dr. Irizarry, is super excited about the garden and wants to make it an integral part. So they're offering a new urban agricultural course this fall.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now would that go through the summer?
No, the course will be during the school year. It'll be a regular academic course.
Oh, okay.
At least at this point, they're not planning for it to be in the summer.
Yeah, I was just saying that's a good growing time.
Right, yeah.
You know, in the summer, to keep the kids off the streets.
Right. We use a lot of the gardens are used in the summer for summer camps.
We
partner
sense.
Up with Parks and Rec and the Boys and Girls Club and the PB&J Kitchen. Lots of different partners, as Aline mentioned. And have different camps out at the gardens.
Oh, that is great.
Yeah.
So you've got this seedling giveaway. Is
yeah.
that, yeah.
So one of the things at Buford Middle School, where we have a full-time garden educator at the school, she hosts a daily garden aid class. That's Emily Axelbaum. She has two classes, and one of the goals as the students coming up from the elementary school into middle school, they're starting to learn more about civic engagement, about leadership. So the students that are in this class, they take responsibility for the garden all the way from ordering seeds this time of year, designing the garden, all the way to, you know, planting, seeding, caring, harvesting. And in the spring, as part of their community service hours, they use a hoop house that we have put up, and they grow all kinds of seedlings. They grow over 5,000 seedlings.
Wow.
And then distribute them to organizations in this across the city, nonprofits, community gardens, that we work with you know, various groups, and the students get to take some home too.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah,
and then everything that's left over, we have a seedling sale.
Yes.
So that the public can also come on in. And so this spring, that'll be May 4th and 5th for the public to come in after we've been able to donate to area partners.
So that's May 4th and 5th, 4th and 5th. Location?
At Buford.
Oh, at Buford Middle School.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the evening, probably.
In the evening.
Like 4 or 5 o'clock.
4 or 5 o'clock, and there'll be announcements for
that. We'll have it on our website,
yeah. Okay. So that, and that's www.cityschoolyardgarden.org is the website for that. What's your mission?
Do you want to hit that, Aline? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. We always talk about how, you know, how we want to, how we pitch ourselves, how we talk to you all about what we do. The short answer is that we're here to cultivate academic achievement, health, environmental stewardship, and community engagement through garden-based experiential learning in Charlottesville City Schools. So I think the academic part of it is sometimes what people are worried about. Is this going to be academically stimulating and rigorous for the students? And it absolutely is. And there's, as you heard about the classes at the high school as well as at Buford Middle School, there is that academic tie. What we do in the elementary schools as well with the programming there, whether it's First Piece to the Table or Harvest of the Month, there is a specific academic tie to everything that we're doing as we're getting them engaged, giving them leadership skills to grow on. And again, that learning about healthy food, healthy living, healthy bodies. So it's all tied in there.
That's great. I'll tell you,
great,
they are doing a wonderful, wonderful thing over there at City Schoolyard Gardens, both Jeanette, Abby Nader, and Aline Carey, as well as the rest of the staff. And they were talking about the education. I was doing some research and found out that when the kids are in the garden, a lot of times they will take some math problems and put them on recipes and through scaling and all that sort of thing for recipes. And this way they're also able to learn math skills at the same time. So yes, they tie the education, regular education, in with the agricultural education as well as health education, because the produce that they grow is so much more healthier than standard conventional produce that you get from far away, much less nutrition in those far away produce items, because they have to travel long distances. And if you do a little research, you'll find out that nutritional value is lost starting immediately from the time a plant is cut. So that's something to take into consideration. I was doing some research. Actually, my lovely wife, Marcia, was doing some research for me, and she found this headline: vegetarian diets can lead to higher risk of heart disease. Uh-oh. Well, anyway, so I'll read it a little bit. It says, it's crucial to take into consideration the quality of foods in a plant-based diet. Of course, vegetarian food has been widely proclaimed to be healthier than a traditional meat and two veggie diet. However, cardiologists have warned some vegetarian food can be just as bad for you, after a study found eating a lot of sweet food and drink, refined grains and potatoes, was linked to a higher risk of heart disease. So it's not enough just to go vegetarian, folks, because there's a lot of diets out there that are saying, oh, yeah, well, we're vegetarian. Yeah, well, and then you go and you find it's got a lot of refined grains and sugars and all that sort of thing. And so it may actually be worse for you than what you think. So he wrote in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, the researchers described how they had looked at information on the diet and health of tens of thousands of medical professionals who took part in the regular surveys. They examined the effects of three different types of vegetarian diets, one which emphasized plants but included some meat. A healthy vegetarian diet consisting of whole grains, fresh fruit and vegetables, and an unhealthy version. The doctor, who was from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston, said when we examined the associations of the three food categories with heart disease risk, we found that healthy plant foods were associated with lower risks. The operative word there being healthy plant foods, whereas less healthy plant foods and animal foods were associated with higher risk. It's apparent that there's a wide variation in the nutritional quality of plant foods, making it crucial to take into consideration the quality of foods in a plant-based diet. The researchers noted that the previous studies about the effect of vegetarian diets on health had tended to treat all plant-based food equally. And we know that's not the case, right? In an editorial in the journal, he said that the research added to the evidence that plant-based diets with whole grains, unsaturated fats, and an abundance of fruits and vegetables deserve more emphasis in dietary recommendations. So there you go. You got to make sure that when you're going vegetarian, that you're going to go real as well. And, of course, the answer to that is go local. If you can keep it local, go to your city market. I just got back from the city market, as a matter of fact, today, and got quite a bit of stuff there. Wonderful, wonderful place. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to let you know, I did some research, and I found out that the broccoli sprouts, about 7 days, 7 to 10 days old, have 100 times more of a cancer-fighting chemical, sulforaphane, and this, it has 100 times more than the mature broccoli. Now, mature broccoli is quite good for you. Trust me, I eat it every day. Wonderful, wonderful stuff, part of cruciferous family. But these little sprouts, 7 to 10 days old, are just so incredibly nutritious. Michael Clark at Planet Earth Diversified, we've had him on here before. He grows it in his greenhouses, provides it all year long, and has several cancer patients that he provides that for. So now I'm going to play you another excerpt from City Schoolyard Gardens because they do such good work over there and they deserve a lot of credit, a lot of credit. So here you go.
And Eric was like, yeah, let's go for it. And so it started with a beautiful garden at Buford in 2010. Mm-hmm. And Linda had this amazing vision of how to include partners in wanting gardens at all the schools. And then Alice Waters came to visit in our area and talked with our superintendent and just inspired a lot of people. And in 2012, we expanded gardens to all of the elementary schools. And then just this past year, we started at the high school, too. So
That's Charlottesville High School. That's amazing. So what exactly do you do? I mean, you know, it's great. Just tell us a little bit about it.
We have the gardens. We take care of the gardens. We have staff at each of the schools. Mm-hmm. We bring students out from the classroom, students and teachers out, have different subjects in the garden. We host classes. We have after-school garden clubs. And we also engage the community. We have work days on the weekends. You know, lots of volunteers from around the community come and help manage these 8 organic gardens. And we really take the opportunity to give youth a chance to engage in the outdoors, to learn through hands-on projects at the schools. And, they're out there. It's a part of their everyday life.
I'd like to get Aileen in here. Talk about some of the statistics of City Schoolyard Gardens.
As far as what we provide?
Yeah.
I think one of the most important things about programs that we offer are the interactions. And so we're looking at about 24,500 youth interactions for about 2,818 youth in our 7 schoolyard gardens. Now this year we just opened a new garden at Charlottesville High School, and we're very proud of that and very excited about what's going on there. Some other things that you'd love to know, there's about 950 volunteer hours and about 70 partners are actively engaged in the gardens and the events. Some of those partners range from the City of Charlottesville Public Schools. They're a huge partner of ours, so it could range from that to some of our business partners like Styx, who always have a Styx for Sheds program for us twice a year.
Styx for Sheds, what is that?
Do you want to talk about it, Jeanette?
Sure. Styx hosts the, on Saturdays, they host non-profit.
Oh, Bill Hamilton's place.
Yeah.
Styx. Oh, okay.
Styx,
okay.
Bob
okay.
Shop.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
And so for Saturday, every Saturday in January and in May, the 10% of the proceeds go to the city schoolyard garden. And the first year we did it, we used it to build sheds for
that's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they've continued to do it for us over the years, even though we have the sheds now. Now it's going towards programming. So we still call it Styx for Sheds, but it's going towards programming
now. So that's
now.
A local bid. They're one of our sponsors, Hamilton.
Yeah.
It's good to know that they're right in there.
Absolutely. They also help to provide healthy snacks for the students when we have some of our events or after-school garden club. They're helping to provide some of those healthy snacks for the students as well. So they're one of our great partners as well. I think another really good one, and I was actually talking to one of the school board members last night, and she was mentioning a family coming through and getting to see Buford Garden as they're moving to the area and how excited they were about the opportunity for their family to take part in what's going on there at Buford, which is the middle school here in the city. About 95% of parents and teachers feel that having a CSG garden at their school is very important. And so she got to see that firsthand with this family, that they were, you know, looking around the school, trying to make some decisions, saw that garden, and fell in love, which is what we want to happen for families.
Absolutely.
And students, you know, for their families as well.
Do you find the students do better in school?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of reasons why. I mean, you can look at different, if you're talking about actual academic performance or feeling as though they have a place to be that belongs to them. There's many different reasons why students who are engaged in being in the garden, being healthy. I mean, that, of course, having a healthy snack before you have to take a test or, you know, do work in class, that can have a significant effect on how you perform. So there's a ton. We have been doing evaluations over the years, so we have research to back that up as well as to how the experience having the garden there, participating in the programs, really does provide great outcomes for the students.
Yes, it does. I'm telling you, it really does. We're going to take a little break here, and we will be back shortly. And we're back. This is MC Blair right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and you are listening to the show To Your Health, where we promote healthy food grown right here in the Charlottesville, Albemarle area. And incredibly important. Community gardens brings people together. It creates a sanctuary of kindness. The community garden is a place where people can come to get their hands in the soil and do something about the challenges that they see. It's become an open and welcome community where everyone is allowed to harvest edibles and share their knowledge. Most importantly, It comes to a better quality of life, and it's a place where people can work together from different income strata, different cultures, different skin colors, and it's just an absolute wonderful, wonderful place. And there's some community gardens, and I was talking to Todd Niedmeyer of Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, UACC, and I mentioned this to him. He thought this was a great idea, where local music groups will come and play in the same area where the people are working in the garden. And I suppose they can use that time to practice and maybe get some feedback from the people working in the garden. And quite frankly, if I just had this thought, you know, if it was publicized that, hey, so-and-so is going to be playing at this particular community garden on Saturday, maybe more people would show up and volunteer to work, which would be great, you know. So I'll tell you the other thing that community farming offers, many benefits to farmers who want to practice sustainable agriculture and to communities who want fresh, healthy, locally produced food. That's what it's all about, folks. Community farms are locally owned and operated. They're democratically controlled. The local farms keep money circulating in the communities rather than exporting it to absentee owners or shareholders. That's what we do here at WPVC. Our station is locally owned and operated, and any advertising dollars that come into us stay right here in Charlottesville. It's a pretty good thing. So that's what we practice as well. So, sustainable radio. So the benefits, of course, are passed on to the local restaurants, farmers markets, retailers, and, of course, the consumers. Now, agricultural farming practices, as we know, can both harm and protect the environmental systems. Groups that farm cooperatively feel a strong sense of stewardship and responsibility to the land, but farmers do face barriers when they choose to farm sustainably. By basing their agriculture activities on sustainable practices, community farms balance environmental sustainability with retention and protection of valuable and threatened farmland. This is really important. It also provides local food security. Rural communities import much of their food right now. So if in the global food crisis, establishing local suppliers of diverse food products increases food security in small rural communities. Now, Charlottesville is not a rural community, but we are certainly surrounded by them. And there's a lot of folks that do not have access to quality, healthy food. And that's what community-supported agriculture or community-based agriculture supports. The community that invests, communities that invest in community farms help secure and govern all the land. It's unbelievable. The group leads the development of a whole farm plan, the whole farm. And we're going to hear from Carter Wallace in a few minutes, and he talks about the whole and how you eat and what you eat. So, so important. Right now, we're going to play a little excerpt from Courtney Evans of the PB&J Fund, and they work very closely with City Schoolyard Gardens as well as other food security or other food justice network groups. There are 16 groups. You can Google it, Food Justice Network of Charlottesville. And there are 16 groups in that under that umbrella. And I'll talk a little bit about that also in my two-minute drill at the end. But we're going to go right now to Ms. Courtney Evans. I'm MC Blair. I am sitting here with Courtney Evans of the PB&J Fund. She's been over there for a while. We're going to talk to her today. Hi, Courtney. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. How long have you been over there at PB&J?
Do you know, I've been there now since 2012. So it would have been fall of 2011. Mm-hmm. I spent about 3.5 months working on a organic farm, and everything was done by hand, and I worked in the garden and worked with the grapes for the wine and then the olives for the olive harvest for the oil, and it was just an amazing time there. Definitely, I think being in touch with the earth, with our hands, it was just special. Took me back to our roots for sure.
I noticed the mission, PB&J Fund, you're part of the Food Justice Network.
That is correct, we sure are.
16 organizations, and you connect Charlottesville youth with the resources and knowledge necessary to develop a healthy diet.
Correct.
That's awesome.
I guess our goal really is to create choices and to empower kids to know how to cook and to know that there are options that are out there. And so we're constantly coming back to that. We actually, it's funny because we recently did a unit on it was fast food makeover that we worked with the kids. And so we took different menu items that we felt would be really popular at fast food restaurants and then brought it to the kitchen and made them healthier. And so I remember one was a grilled ranch chicken sandwich where we obviously grilled the chicken. We made sweet potato fries with that where we roasted the sweet potatoes in the oven and had whole grain buns. And so I think we constantly come back to that message that there are healthy options out.
Yeah, they taste it and they go, this is really good.
And that they've made it, and they realize that
absolutely.
It does taste really yummy. So,
and that goes to the second portion of the mission, which is by working to develop a healthy diet by working with community partners to provide healthy meals and teach cooking habits, aims to address kids' nutritional needs at each stage of development, which is great. Now, we had that kind of dovetails in a couple of weeks ago. We had a couple of gals here from UVA, Sybil Kranz and Anna Maria Sigariz. They are focusing their research on the healthy diet for the first 1,000 days of life.
Huh.
It was the first 3 years, so they're given that nice, strong platform, getting with the caregivers, and then, of course, they can just dovetail right into this when they get into the schools, and they're already aware a little bit, you know. You mentioned Chef Kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
Chef Kids. Yep.
All right. So talk about that.
Chef Kids. So we are so lucky that we have wonderful partners. And so we work with, just to name a couple, for our Chef Kids program, Boys and Girls Club of Central Virginia. Mm-hmm. We work with the Southwood Unit, Cherry Avenue, as well as Jack Jewett, as well as the City of Promise in the West Haven community, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, City Schoolyard Garden, Parks and Recreation. And so during the school year, we primarily focus on after-school programming. So kids will come to us after school is over, and then we will cook with them. And so we focus, right now we're focusing on various units. So we did a fast food makeover unit, we did a Tex-Mex unit, and with the idea that we're creating recipes that are healthier, introducing whole grains, introducing fresh vegetables and fresh fruits, as well as cooking techniques to kids. And really it's for their empowerment and for their enjoyment as well, too, to create a healthy meal. We focus in on moderation as well, and so we, of course, we allow for desserts, we cook desserts, but then teaching that those treats are in moderation as well. So, and then using my plate as our reference too, so having half your plate fruits and vegetables, whole grains, milk, protein. So it's fun, and the kids, I think they'll see what we're making, and they won't be quite so sure about it until after they finish making it, and then all of a sudden they want to try it and taste it, and then we talk about how it tastes, and we offer their suggestions as well on what could we do to make the recipe better, and so they actually have a big say in what we cook.
Do you hear feedback from the families, or at least the kids reporting back how now mom and dad or whoever the main caregiver is are starting to come around to that?
That's a great question. We heard, I remember one of the instructors that teach for us out in the community at Boys and Girls Club, and one of our instructors came to us and said that his student had said at the grocery store, had asked his mom to buy broccoli. He knew how to cook with broccoli, and we were so excited about that. And then in the summertime, we do summer camps where we work, and we partner with the local food hub and do a summer tastings program where we highlight a produce each week, and that produce item, whether or not it's tomatoes or cucumbers or peppers, is in every recipe. And I remember last year we were doing kale 1 week, and the kids wanted to take home bunches of kale because they wanted to make kale chips at home. So we do have stories like that that just totally make our week.
Yes, Courtney Evans from PB&J Fund. Just a great interview we had there. And she talked about broccoli. I said, like it or not, broccoli is good for you. There's a compound in there. I mentioned it before. It's sulforaphane. It's a phytochemical. Of course, that's a chemical produced by plants. It's found naturally in broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables. And it may reduce some harmful effects of type 2 diabetes. You know, that's one of our battle cries here, to help reduce type 2 diabetes and childhood obesity. Basically, what this does, it sparked broccoli sales around the world when they discovered this. It demonstrated the compound's effectiveness in boosting the body's ability to resist cancer. The popular science called the findings among the top 100 scientific discoveries of the 20th century. And the little sprouts, as I said earlier, have about 100 times more of this sulforaphane than the adult plants. So that's pretty cool. You know, think about it. Food can be medicine. It is medicine. Food is medicine. And that's an absolute fact. And talking more about community farms and more community-based agriculture, why it's so good. Oh my God, it's just, I can't stress it enough. I wanted to play a little bit of Carter Wallace here, and he was from, he's no longer at Farfields, but he was at Farfields Farm for a number of years, a farm manager there. Really, really, really good stuff. And we'll play a little bit of that, and then I'll go into my two-minute drill.
Fantastic. Now, Carter, I mentioned earlier about food as medicine, and you actually said that you like to think of it more as agriculture. as medicine. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think probably like most people, I had a more specific calling to sort of redirect my attention and physical labor and such toward being more involved in agriculture as a producer. And then when you follow one specific calling, it opens up to a number of different callings. So for some people, it's maybe it's in a digestive disorder, that says, hey, I got to figure something else out. This is not working in my diet. For some people, it's just a disconnection from nature and they follow that. For some people, it's just an aversion to pesticides on their apples. I think what I've found is particularly as we think about food as medicine or as I observe the what might be posted about widely, food as medicine. It's a very true statement, and there's a lot in there, and it's really a gateway statement. It's a gateway to consider far more about what food is, and it's a gateway to consider not just what we eat, but how we eat it. And when one starts considering that, the desire to have a good apple, an apple that tastes good perhaps, or an apple that doesn't have pesticides on it, or an apple that built soil in the production of the apple as opposed to lost it. You start to really unravel a whole host of questions, and that is an invitation to a culture of the as medicine more than just the food as medicine. When we desire a really healthy food product, generally, and I can't say I could think of a counterexample to this, we're going to find that that's going to lead us all the way back to an entirely different lifestyle. And really, when you think of there's plenty of examples of really impressive yogis and such that might eat an incredibly simple blend that would shock your nutritionist, and you're like, how could you be alive on this? As we mature and down that path of food as medicine, I think everybody comes to understand that it's not just what you eat, but how you eat it. We're not just what we eat, we're how we eat.
That is so true. We're not just what we eat, it's how we eat as well. And I'll play some more of Carter's in later shows, but I wanted to get to my two-minute drill before we finished here. And the 40 years from the late 50s to the late 90s was when U.S. government started to, with, of course, the best of intentions, encourage the factory farm model through farm subsidies and tax breaks for participating farms. Today we're faced with the logical result of another case of changing the natural order of things. Big ag, big meat, corporate control of our farm system is a representative, or corporate control of our food system is a recipe for disaster because the corporate model dictates profit over all, as opposed to a local farmer who practices taking care of the soil, water use, and the general health and the produce of the meat products. We will result in better health of the people, not only physically, but also a community with a general commitment to work together. That is so important. That's what we champion here in To Your Health. Community working together for food justice and food security. Now, this, of course, will take time, and we here at To Your Health are committed to helping the many true food citizens like, Todd Niemeyer and Courtney Evans and, all the people at City Schoolyard Gardens. A lot of true food citizens. We can help get the word out to the general public, who we hope care about improving their health and life in general. The move towards local food began in the 60s with the organic food movement. Now, concerns about the health and environmental risks associated with the synthetic fertilizers and pesticides were not the only reasons they chose to grow foods organically. It was about a commitment to treating the whole farm as a living organism, not just a profit center. Treating the workers well, with a living wage, and working with the community at large. There it goes again, right back to community. Big farming corporations have gotten into the organic market, but that's not the point. To be truly helpful, food needs to be raised locally by a farmer who believes and is committed to the before-mentioned principles, that of soil health, carbon sequestration, and being part of the whole. Let's do this, listeners. Let's research on how to become involved. Look up the Food Justice Network and decide which of the many participating organizations you can donate to or volunteer for, especially UACC. if you're in city schoolyard gardens in the PB&J fund, you'll be rewarded in ways yet unimagined. I want to thank Amy Leeser, Jeanette Albee Nader, Courtney Evans, Carter Wallace, and Aline Carey. And I want to thank all of you who download our show. I hope something you hear sparks a desire to know more. Remember, participating in community activities, treating your bodies with care, and eating real foods are keys to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.